So the second part of this is called the 10 innermost jewels of the Kadampa tradition. And these 10 jewels are things that help us gain some kind of equanimity in relationship to the 8 worldly concerns. So these 10 aren't listed out on the outline. I didn't, because I was afraid the outline would get too long. So I'll just kind of go through them. There's basically 3 general categories. There's 4 trusting acceptances, and there's 3 Vajra convictions, and there's 3 mature attitudes towards being expelled, finding, and attaining. So if none of that makes sense, don't worry. Hopefully it will after it gets explained. Okay, so... Oh, and I should say the Kadampa tradition that practiced this. This was one tradition that came from, remember I talked before about Atisha, the great Indian sage who brought the second wave of Buddhism from India to Tibet. And this tradition followed from him. And this tradition is one of my favorites because these people were like really genuine, sincere practitioners. They really abandon all this worldly nonsense and icky gooey mind, and they practice very purely without a lot of show and pomp and flamboyance. They just did their practice, without looking for attention to it. And so I feel that that's, for me personally, a very, very good example. Because there is a great tendency in our mind of when we start giving up our worldly attachments, we do want people to notice how holy we're being. Or we want to, make some progress up in the hierarchy, the religious hierarchy. Yeah, I love when my family asks me, where are you in the hierarchy of Buddhism? I never know how to answer that. But, there's the mind that I'd like to have a title. I want to be famous. I want people to notice how much I've given up. So, it reminds me of when I was in Taiwan at one point, because you see the Chinese don't use the terms Lama and Geshe and Rinpoche and all these kinds of titles like the Tibetans do. They just have Sifu and Fasa. I don't know, maybe they have some others in Chinese, but these are the 2 I always heard. They kind of were applied to everybody. But the Tibetans have all these different titles and things. So some of the people from the Tibetan tradition were there for a conference, and Lama Lundra all of a sudden became a Rinpoche, and one Australian monk became a Lama because nobody, from the other cultures knew how to use the terms. So, everybody was becoming Lamas and Rinpoches and everything. So we used to tease each other about it. But, it's very easy in a tradition that has, lots of titles and different size thrones and different kinds of hats and different kinds of brocade and all of this, and then all the Tibetans, all the different hairdos and the different robes and it's so easy for our mind to get really sticky in all of this. The Kadampa people, they didn't get involved in any of this. They were just really out to practice very purely without, getting a lot of status and prestige. So these 4 trusting acceptances, the first 4 of the 10 innermost jewels. Okay. The first one is, as our innermost outlook on life, being willing to accept the Dharma with total trust. Okay, and accepting the Dharma as a very simple and effective way of thinking, speaking, and acting. Okay, so this comes through recognizing we have a precious human life, thinking about the impermanence of our life, thinking about what's important, setting our priorities, and coming to the conclusion that practicing Dharma, i.e., transforming our minds, is the most important thing to entrust our life to. Okay? So, this is something for us to think about. We may not feel this way right now. We may think our bank account is the most important thing to entrust ourselves to, our life to. But this is, a way to start to train the mind to really look, okay? Think about the preciousness of the life. Think about death. Think about our Buddha nature and what we can do. Set our priorities and hopefully come to the conclusion that actualizing our potential, becoming a Buddha, practicing the Dharma, is the most important thing to do in our lives. Okay, so we entrust our life to that. Now, the second one is, as our innermost attitude towards following the Dharma, being willing to accept with total trust, even becoming a beggar. Now ego's going to start to shake a little bit, right? Okay, fine, I'll entrust my life to practicing the Dharma. That's great. But then part of our mind gets really scared with, well, if I practice the Dharma, maybe I'm going to be poor. If I really sit and I go to teachings all the time and I do my meditation practice and I don't, work 50 and 60 and 85 hours a week anymore, maybe I'm going to be poor. Yeah, and I'm not going to get the next promotion. And, some of our buttons are starting to get pushed. This is our attachment to the eight worldly concerns, getting pushed. Okay, so then we have to, understand what is important in our life and not compromise it. If we've decided in the first entrustment that, in the first trusting acceptance, that we were accepting the Dharma, then don't compromise that value because of our attachment to worldly things. In other words, if something is really important to us, not in terms of important because we're trying to get what our ego wants, but important in terms of ethics, in terms of the meaning of our life, then we have to live by it without, letting all of our worries about money and things like that interfere with it. Because there's going to be no end to worries about money. If you stop your Dharma practice because you're worried about money, and you go to work to get more money, you're never going to have enough money. Yeah? Because the mind that is attached to money never has enough. Yeah? So in this thing, what we're saying here is if Dharma is really, the center thing in our life, that the chief support of our life, then to live by it and not be so afraid of what's going to happen materially to us. And the Buddha dedicated, I don't know how many eons of merit, and made a prayer that all the people that follow his teachings purely will never starve, even in times of famine and gross inflation. And although this may not mean much, that's kind of been my experience because I haven't worked since 1975 and I haven't starved yet. There have been times when I've been very broke but haven't starved. And so I really think there is something to this thing. You never really hear of people starving because they practice the Dharma. But our mind gets all fearful about it anyway. Okay? So, we really have to, to entrust ourselves to the practice, even if it means becoming a beggar. And this is breaking our attachment to security, financial security. And it's also helping us get in touch with the fact that preparing for future lives, practicing our spiritual path, is really, at the end of the day, more important than surrounding ourselves with a lot of money and possessions that never bring lasting happiness. Okay, so really penetrating that in the mind. Yeah, we say that here, but really feeling that in here. Okay. Then the next, trusting acceptance. Okay, as our innermost attitude towards becoming a beggar, being willing to accept with total trust even having to die. Ah! Talk. Okay. As our innermost attitude towards becoming a beggar, being willing to accept with total trust even having to die. Okay. So what happens is, you know, we're saying, okay, I'll practice the Dharma. Okay, I'll be a beggar. But then the fear comes up. I might die of starvation. I don't want to die of starvation. You know, and freak out comes again. That'd make a nice title to a movie, wouldn't it? Freak out comes again. Okay. So here, it's really important, again, you know, to center in very much on what our priority is, that even if it means that we die of starvation in order to practice the Dharma, it's going to be worth it. Why? Because in previous lives, we've had infinite number of previous lives. Okay? We've had all sorts of wealth in previous lives. Where has it gotten us? In none of our previous lives have we ever died of starvation for the Dharma. Yeah? And so we usually die, you know, with lots of attachment and trying to get as much stuff around us as possible. So giving, if we have to try and develop the attitude that even if I were to die of starvation, it would be worth it in order to practice the Dharma. Why? Because Dharma practice is more important than, you know, living a life in which I don't practice, but I spend all my time getting possessions and food. Okay? So again, it's really confronting our grasping mind that is attached to all of these things and really asking us to do a lot of deep soul searching to really overcome that fear of dying of starvation by having enough faith in the efficacy of the practice to know that even if we did die of starvation, it would be worth it. But since the Buddha dedicated all this merit, we probably won't, you know. But it's hard to have that kind of faith. But it's, you know, it's really asking us to check up very deeply here. Okay, then the fourth innermost attitude is, or trusting acceptance, is as our innermost attitude towards death, being willing to accept with total trust, even having to die friendless and alone in an empty cave. Okay, you can tell this was in Tibet. Okay, here it might die friendless and alone in the middle of a big city. Okay, on the street. Okay, so here is our mind that it's, you know, we've gotten through, okay, I'll practice the Dharma because that's worthwhile. I'm willing to risk becoming a beggar because I really believe in my practice. I'm even willing to risk dying in order to have the time and space to practice. But I don't want to die alone. And what's going to happen to my body after I die? Okay, so again, more fear comes up, more attachment and clinging comes up at this point. Okay, so here, it's really important to remember that if we practice well, we won't mind dying alone. If we don't practice well, then we're going to want lots of people around us because we're going to be terrified. But the thing is, none of the people are going to be able to give us any long-lasting comfort because we're going to be experiencing the ripening of our own negative karma at that time, which other people can't stop. They can't stop our death. They can't stop the ripening of our karma. Yeah. Yeah? Whereas if we really devote our mind to practicing very purely, then even if we die out on the street, we can die very, very blissfully. Okay? So this kind of mind that gets very attached, you know, we want to have lots of friends and relatives around when we die, it's very indicative of a lot of fear and a lot of attachment going on in our mind, which means that we're likely to be very unsettled at the time we die. Yeah? Now, of course, if you have Dharma friends near you when you die, that's great, because Dharma friends, you know, I mean, they'll encourage us in the Dharma, they'll help us put our minds in a good attitude. So wanting to have our Dharma friends around us when we're dying, no problem with that, okay? But it's this kind of clinging of, I want all my family around holding my hand, I want to know I'm loved, I want everybody crying and carrying on because I'm dying. Yeah? And so that might seem to make us happy, but actually it causes a very disturbing mind at death time. Yeah? Because they can't stop the death, they can't stop the negative karma. And if we've given up our whole practice in order to ensure that we die in a proper setting, you know, we're not going to have the good karma to take with us at the time we die. And then, you know, this one is also asking us to look at our attachment to what happens to our body after we die. Okay? Because some people get really worried about, you know, I want a big funeral procession, I want a big grave, I want a nice monument on my grave, I want my picture, I want to be remembered, I want to be put in the obituary column in the newspaper so that everybody can mourn me. You know, some people get very, very concerned about that. I want to have, you know, the nice embalmer so I'll look good, like I was saying last time. I'll look good. I want a nice expensive coffin. I want to be buried in a nice pleasant place, a nice high-class cemetery. Yeah? So what this point is getting us to look at is that when we're dead, it really doesn't matter where we're buried. And it really doesn't matter whether we have a big funeral procession. And it really doesn't matter whether a lot of people mourn us. Because when we're dead and we're not going to be hanging around this earth anymore looking at what's going on. Yeah? So why worry about it when we're alive? Okay. So this is really helping us, again, to free ourselves from all this clinging attachment to big funerals and being mourned and having a nice grave and things like that. Because it really doesn't matter. Our body isn't us, and when this body dies, you know,